Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the IGN podcast. It's not the IGN podcast, it's the IGN UK podcast.
We might as well be the IGN podcast. We can be the flagship.
Why not?
We're the only podcast that do everything that IGN covers.
Exactly. Like, including big gaming events. I don't know what my segue is going to be there.
We do film, we do games, we very occasionally will chat a comic that I might have read.
And if Matt's here, which he is...
We'll talk
a little bit of anime as well.
They released the trailer for Delicious in Dungeon. It's really good. I'm excited.
I'm sure they did. Let's talk about PlayStation.
We are platform agnostic, apart from today.
Exactly, because this was Sony's week. For better or worse, I actually thought it was a pretty good showcase. I think people need to calm down, because this is what happens now. These Twitter accounts just put bullet-pointed lists of everything that's going to be in these shows, and then when half it doesn't turn up, everyone goes, well, that was a disappointment. It's like, you were never going to see GTA 6 and Bloodborne 2.
it's funny, like, people have decided that these randomers on the internet are actually kind of like the game's media. It's like, go to some journalists if you want to know the real
exactly.
deal.
I thought it was, you know, it's not the best showcase I've ever seen, but there was at least 5 to 6 things there that I got excited about, and... You know,
I think
out of an hour, I'll tell that.
I think it's the problem of, like, it would have been nice to see, like, some like, very big stuff. But the stuff that was shown is all really interesting. Like, well, I think it's name recognition versus, like, just exciting new concepts. Which
exactly.
I'd rather have new stuff.
Also, like, the top three things that we have on this list that we're about to speak to are colossal
they
names.
Look amazing. And people got to remember, Jeff Keighley's show hasn't happened yet. And last year, that's where The Last of Us stuff was. So I would not be surprised if we see some Naughty Dog at Jeff Keighley's show. But there we go. We'll talk about that when the time comes. Or you guys will anyway. But first, let's talk about Sony. Lot of games. I think there was like 30-odd games in an hour there. Do you know what I've noticed? A lot of heist games recently. Especially like multiplayer
extraction
heist games.
People, shooters, as they're called.
Robin is hot. That's what I'm saying, basically. People love Robin.
It's this thing, Robin, like, can you remember, hot. Like... I think it was my first Gamescom that I did with IGN, and I went to see The Circle. Can you remember me going there and talking about that on the podcast? And at that time, I'm sure I'd said on the podcast, but maybe I didn't, but it was definitely the conversation I'm having at the time is, it felt like this was, like, Battle Royale was moving on, and we were moving into something different, and The Circle felt kind of like the first of that thing. And then I started to realize, well, The Hunt Showdown was already out at the time and was already doing something very cool. And now, it does feel like, I think Battle Royale is over and Extraction Shooters is the thing
we're
now.
3v3s are in.
Quietly
got, what,
become...
Hyenas coming?
Yeah, yeah.
The finals. And now, what's it? Jade Raymond's studio's new game. Fair Games.
Fair Games,
yeah.
With a dollar sign. It's like Kesha.
Exactly. We're not going to talk about that one in depth because there's not really a lot to talk about in depth. But we will be talking about a PvP shooter later. But first, let's start with the big guns. Metal Gear Solid 3 is back, and
chills when those drums hit, genuinely.
One of my absolute favourite games of all time. It is just, like, at least three of my favourite boss battles of all time. Probably, like, if you ask me, name 10 best boss battles of all time, at least 2 to 3 of them would be in that list. It's just a masterclass in boss design. I can't wait to see how good it's going to look. I'm putting a lot of faith here in Konami to basically, I think everyone, and you know, there's no reason to doubt yet. Everyone's thinking, just let this be the Resi remakes for Metal Gear. If it's that, we're in for a good time. Mm-hmm. Of course, Kojima not involved as far as we know. I'd be very surprised if he was.
Do we also know which studio is working on it at all? Konami?
I think they've said Konami in association with Virtuous Studios, who normally do handle like ports and stuff like that. So it's not 100% clear. I don't know if an actual single developer has actually spoke about it. Like, we don't know who's directing this or anything. But yeah, they've said it's going to be faithful, same story,
Same voice cast.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, they haven't officially said that means David Hayter. That's like the one question mark.
They'll save it for a press briefing at some point. Yeah. I think that's a big enough name that, you know, it's a headline in itself that he says yes.
But I just, God, I can't. Like, I just say words like Shagahod and the end and stuff like that, and it just gets me excited.
The sorrow, mate.
Oh, the sorrow is amazing as well, and of course, the boss. But we won't. I don't want to spoil things for people who haven't played that game, because you're in for a hell of a treat. I know, Matt Persler, you haven't actually ever finished.
My history with Metal Gear is like a bit spotty. Kind of, like, mm-hmm. I never had a PlayStation 1, so I never played the original. Although it was out on PC, but I was young enough that like. Grew up in kind of like, my mum was a little bit kind of like more cautious about violence, and I can remember us going into a game and me picking up the box for Metal Gear. She was like, you can have it if you want, but I read on the back that you could garrot people, and I was like, maybe I'm a bit young for this. So I add something else instead. But yeah, I loved Metal Gear 2. Metal Gear Solid 2, should say. Absolutely loved that when I was in middle school. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't play Metal Gear Solid 3 until it came out in the HD collection on the Vita. And because I bought it on Vita, it's not the best analog sticks for shooting with, like precise aiming, which a Metal Gear game really does need. So yeah, I'm completely missing 3. Like, I got to the end as the boss. Like, I did that boss. Yeah. Thought it was fucking incredible. But my knowledge of the story after that, and almost certainly it will not be the Metal Gear remake that I play that with first. It will be the Master Collection version, because that's out this year, and I will be playing that.
Finally, and I say finally, you know, it's hard to get these games in one place for such like beloved games. They're all dotted all over the place. Mm-hmm. So it is good they're putting, what, 1, 2, and 3 in a collection this autumn to play. And I, do you know what? I probably will go back and play those as well, because I'm actually spotty on 2. That's the one I'm spotty on. I know 1 and 3 very well. Mm-hmm. 2, I think I played once, but I just like, I don't know if I finished it. That's the one I'm looking forward to.
The ending's real weird.
Yeah. I can't wait for this game. And as someone I know, Matt, who's, you know, let's face it, you're a little bit of a level design pervert, a little bit of a boss design pervert, in the nicest way possible. You'll have a lovely time with this.
I figured I would. Yeah, it's this will be a spot that's been long needed rectifying, and I'm sure I will write something on it when time comes.
I can't think of a game that has just such a like cohesive sense of place than Metal Gear 3. Like, it just, like, you just feel like you're hanging out in the woods. Like, it just rocks.
And, for such, like, narrow levels as well, it does feel like you're just in a massive woods as well. I don't know how they quite do it. And just, like, it's pure Kojima. It is his best game. I think Metal Gear 3 is the best one. And, yeah, I just can't wait to play this game. Who knows when we're going to be playing it again? Because no real indication. We've only got cinematic and, what, 4 or 5 gameplay screenshots? Shots.
I feel like we'll be waiting a while for this. Yeah. Like, they've got to make a real good first impression with this. Because this, you know, there's no guarantee of this, but this does feel like it's the start of something bigger, right?
Yeah. You'd think they'd go on to do the others and... Yeah, that's why that volume 1 is probably coming out in autumn, isn't it? To tide people over.
And you know, my theory about the fact that this game is actually called Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater, I think they've taken the number off it because they want people to have this as the first Metal Gear game. It's the first in the timeline.
So it makes sense. Chronologically, yeah.
Yeah, so they don't want people to think that, like, why should I play 3 first? No, you're playing it first because it's chronological.
But then if they do it all chronologically, then that means that at some point we're going to be playing, like, Metal Gear Solid 5 before we're playing Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah, I guess maybe perhaps they could do like a re-release where they just change the title on the box. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a weird one because although you could tell this story chronologically, you do kind of, is one of those where you do gleam interest in things from playing them in the original order.
Well,
the
it's the
time.
Star Wars thing, right? But like, from what I understand, people that watch Star Wars through in chronological order still find real cool moments there that they don't know of. So I guess... None of us can really say that because we'll always have played them in a rough release order.
Yeah. Well, one thing we do know we'll be playing much sooner, Alan Wake 2. I was already very excited for this game.
This was my gamer show.
Yeah. Remedy. I think it was mine too. Like, Remedy, close to my heart anyway. Like, you know, they don't miss me. Even Quantum Break, I think, is good. But nowhere near as good as other of their games. But I do still think it's a good game. But Alan Wake 2, I was excited. Then this trailer hit, and I was like, oh my God, this looks terrifying.
Like, I am it's hitting on so things in that get on me. How horror it is. Like, it is. You said, Cardi, that you saw a little bit of kind of like the True Detective side
absolutely.
In it.
The look of those enemies, and they've said, yeah, it evolves. There's like different stories going on. So there's like these cultist ritual murders in the town of Bright Falls. Mm-hmm. You've got Bright Falls. You've got Alan Wake himself caught in
like the dark place, or whatever.
Yeah, the
it's
dark
called.
Place. He's been lost in there, writing his stories, and then you've got the FBI agent who's also playing story, whose partner seems to be Sam Lake.
Yeah, it is Sam Lake. Yeah. I also saw, I don't know if this is true, so please don't quote me on it, but I'm sure I saw someone saying that James McCaffrey that played Max Payne, is he voicing him?
They're going to do some weird Max Payne. Like,
because that's
there's
Max
already
Payne,
the
right?
connected. There's the connected universe with Control and Alan Wake. They've not said Max Payne is in this universe, but they won't be able to help
but if
themselves.
If it's the face of
Max Payne,
of the original Max Payne, not obviously the later one, voiced by the guy that plays Max Payne's voice,
he could be Max doing Payne's a different face. It. Imagine Alan Wake was voice like, either. Oh, I just wrote this like hard-boiled detective thriller while I was on sabbatical. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because in the original Alan Wake, you find pages of a hard-boiled detective novel. And whilst it doesn't say that the detective's name is Max Payne, it's voiced by Max Payne's voice actor. So it really won't surprise me if as the Remedy universe comes together, it's just a case of that Alan Wake wrote the Max Payne books and that was what you were playing.
Yeah, great. That would be so good. And they've said, so you aren't just playing as Alan Wake, you're obviously playing as this FBI agent.
Saga.
And also, interesting, I don't know if you read this, you play as both of them. You can choose to play their stories in any order you want. You can switch between them.
Yeah.
And play. So I'm very intrigued. They already do some very interesting world and narrative stuff, Remedy, but this seems like a step further than that because I can't quite remember anything that does sound quite like that. But
no, I'll be fascinated to see how kind of like it feels like, therefore, every major story junction must be designed with the idea of like, here's how this storyline will feel to a player if they played the Alan stuff before they did it Saga and vice versa. Because like they're very smart with their storytelling. So I imagine there's all these kind of things are thought about. And, you know, what happens if you just play all of Saga's story first and then all of Alan's second?
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see how that pans out.
And the fact that Alan, I just call him Alan, I keep thinking Alan Partridge, Alan Wake is stuck like in this dark place. It's their excuse to do some more Control stuff, isn't it? Yeah. Just all the weird stuff. And like, because that's what I was wondering was like, are we just going back to Bright Falls? So I feel like I saw all of Bright Falls in the original. Like, there's not a lot to it. It's a great place, but
it's
like,
going to look different. I reckon it will be a case of, because there's no guarantee that which place is real, right? The dark place could be real, or Bright Falls could be literally being written by Alan at the time. So, you know, if it's fake, it can reassemble, it can look completely different to the last time we went.
Yeah, it looked proper so horror, especially that clip where that big guy with like a big hammer or axe just blasts through all that. Just if you show me that 5 second clip, we're going, oh, the new Resident Evil looks good. I'm not normally a big horror guy, but they've got me, because this is like culty sort of stuff like this. That's what truly like gets me. Yeah. And yeah, this is going to be horrible, but amazing, I imagine. And it looks absolutely gorgeous as well. Like, gah, yeah, I'm very excited about Alan Wake 2. Spider-Man 2 also coming out later this year. Mm-hmm. That also looks unbelievable. Like that sequence, I think I tweeted it. That sequence to me, I was like, they're just doing the Uncharted Madagascar like chase sequence, but on a New York river. And I think at times it looked even better. It's just the amount of like, I know this is what, love it or hate it, this is what Sony are known for now, is these cinematic single player games. Mm-hmm. Personally, that's what I love. So I'm all in for this. But like, they were going fully for it in this clip. And yeah, I'm just so excited as well.
My main thing is I appreciated all of the kind of design elements in like seeing that how kind of like, you know, Peter's got the symbiote suit, so he's got symbiote abilities now, and we can see that there was a new ability wheel for Miles, so he's got his own things that are like on the L and R buttons now. Like, they've obviously got their wingsuits and stuff like that. But for me, it was like the absolute joy of seeing these reinterpreted characters and putting together on the fly, like, what is happening here? And it feels like, oh, kind of like Kurt Connors has been like researching the symbiote? Mm. And is it going to be a case of that, will Peter become Venom? Or, like, we've seen Spider
at the end
in
the
previous
one,
trailer.
Yeah.
They were separate, right? Like, Venom was there. So are we going to get, like, an Eddie Brock situation where Eddie comes into the picture later on in the game? Because this trailer suggested that Peter's becoming dark, right? He's got the ring-style thing of becoming more evil because he's in the symbiote suit. So when is the kind of, like, Venom going to become its own thing? And how does Kraven work in that? Is Kraven, like, the character that comes in to be your first boss, and then obviously Venom becomes the last boss?
I don't know.
So many things that were going on. I was like, I really liked their interpretation of the Spider-Man mythos in the first two games. And this feels like it's more knotted. It's more kind of like complex and twisted together. Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
I really loved Yuri Lowenthal's voice delivery for like just giving a little bit of extra gruffness, but he's still like boyish Yuri Lowenthal.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't get that last name out. Sorry. Sorry, Yuri.
My prediction is that as Miles, at some, maybe not the end of the game, in the middle of the game, you're going to fight Peter as the symbiote. So, like, it's going to turn so dark, it's like you're going to have to knock it out of him or something. Like, that's going to happen, isn't it? And like, they've confirmed it is not a co-op game. You're going to be switching between these characters. I'm intrigued to see if they're all going to be, like, tailored sequences like that, or if just in the open world you can be, like, switch. Like,
It wouldn't surprise me if they do the GTA thing where you can just switch, because presumably in the actual open world sandbox side of things, they're going to want you to do kind of, like,
Miles missions and Peter missions,
and there'll be areas like activities that maybe it's a case of like the warehouse sequences have been tailored where it's like you've got to go in there as Peter because you need the symbiote suit, right? And there'll be things that are more tailored to what Miles can do, but also just in the sandbox environment you want that player expression of I can be the Spider-Man that I want to be in the more free roamy bits.
I just hope that sandbox is
more impressive than
I like that we're seeing a little more than just Manhattan now. So they need to do that.
It's
we could have the
too,
same map
at the
again.
Very least. Yeah,
and it's just they've solved the river problem by putting 400 cranes along it, so that works. Will they solve the Central Park
problem? Very Spider-Man 2.
I was going to say very the end of it's the end of the first Amazing Spider-Man, isn't it? Where he puts all the cranes across.
Yeah, oh god, it looks good. And what? So October again, I think.
I don't know
or
if
November.
They've said yet, have they? It's just late.
I think that's a rumor. Like, hopefully, it's later this year. I think we've got Alan Wake, and there was another thing like a few days before Alan Wake. Oh, it might even be. Is it Mirage?
That's the 12th, I think, and then I think
Alan Wake's the 17th.
God damn it!
Well, at least Assassin's Creed Mirage is set to be a throwback to the old 20-hour Assassin's Creed days. Hopefully, again. Like, I've enjoyed the recent Assassin's Creed. Like, Valhalla was one of my favourite games that year. Yeah. But at the same time, very happy to see this old-school Assassin's Creed returning. You did a little breakdown of the trailer yesterday, Matt, so you can tell us all. But what's got you most excited?
Same with you, I don't decry the RPG side of it. I love an RPG game, so kind of like having a Viking and a Greek and a... an Egyptian RPG has been great. Going back to classic AC, we've got, for as far as we can see, it's just set in one city. It's set in Baghdad. It's not the same era as the original Assassin's Creed, but it's got enough visual kind of similarity that it's clearly paying homage to that. But the thing that gets me is because it's going more back to the stealth kind of roots, obviously, you're still going to be able to sword fight as much as you want. Assassin's Creed has always let you sword fight, but there's more tools to use for stealth. And it's what Ubisoft calls black box missions that I'm most excited for. You get a hint in this trailer where you play as a guy called Basim, who you may know from Valhalla, but his accomplish in this trailer is like, oh, we need to get you unseen into this building. You could bribe the guards. And Basim's like, no, I'm just going to stab them. But that suggests that there's kind of like this level of choice on how you infiltrate an area, which swings back to Assassin's Creed Unity did this and Syndicate did it a little bit as well, is where you'd have almost like a hitman style approach. Like you'd have a mission and it's like, the first mission of Unity that does this, for example, is Notre Dame. And it's like, you've got to get into Notre Dame and kill this guy that's in there. How are you going to do it? And you can do it in the very normal, following the standard Assassin's Creed way, which would be just climb your way up, find a way in, and then drop down on the guy and stab him in the face. But that mission had like, oh, do you want to tail this guy who has the key to Notre Dame, which means you don't have to infiltrate it. You can literally just let yourself in through the back where there's no guards. And then there were areas inside that had special kills. Like you could go in the confessional booth and wait for your target to go to confession. And then you'd stab him through the wall.
Very Hitman, isn't it?
Yeah, no one's going to find the body then. So it feels like that sort of level of Hitman opportunity stuff might be coming back to Mirage. And I really hope that that pays out. And talking of other stealth games that it's borrowing from, it's got the mark and execute system from Splinter Cell in it.
Yeah.
So you can turn on Assassin's Focus Vision and you can mark out like three people that are like, you know, enemies that are below you. And then Basim will just immediately like dive down and kill all of them in sequence. So you get to do kind of like three kills unseen. Like that system was great in Splinter Cell. So it's really cool to see them kind of borrowing from another UB series.
Yeah, I'm also very excited about this. We've got a lot of games coming up, and this one, I'm glad that I know, you could probably spend a lot of time doing everything in this game if you wanted, but knowing that this is just going to be like, I don't think that, have they actually officially said it's shorter or just like everyone?
Yeah, when they announced it, they said it was like a more focused kind of thing.
That's what I need, because like, I did finish Valhalla, but like, I must have put at least 60 hours into, 80 hours into that game.
It was 120 hours by the time I finished it, and I've still not done everything in that game.
Yeah, I'm well up for this, and looking forward to it. Let's go on to, well, I was going to say something brand new, but something that's actually almost 30 years old.
Ancient, in fact. Yeah. We've uncovered it, dusted it off.
It does take a long time to run a marathon, and Marathon is back. I was going to make a Snickers joke.
I was going to do the same thing,
yeah.
I was like, oh, I thought when they bring it back, they change the name to Snickers.
The Snickers, yeah. Did anyone tweet that? It's too late now. Yeah. It's gone. Marathon. I know actually very little about Marathon, apart from knowing it's a really old Bungie shooter that used to be a campaign game, right?
And the hilarious thing is the fact that basically next to no one would have played it because it was a Mac exclusive. The entire trilogy Mac exclusive.
Yeah. And these days, it's now a PvP only shooter, which I think some people were a little disappointed by. But the aesthetic of that trailer, Bungie know how to get an aesthetic down. Put it that way.
Yeah, I fucking wish that this was them going back to campaign design, because God, I miss Halo. The more that Destiny goes on and Lightfall being an absolute sack of shit, I really do miss like their campaign design now. But yes, Marathon is jumping on the PvP extraction shooter bandwagon. But by God, does it look the at least the best aesthetic for an extraction shooter that they could possibly get.
Is that aesthetic, like, does it roll back to the originals? Like, is it similar at all?
No, like, the originals are kind of much more kind of like, they're not Doom, but they are clearly from an era where Doom and Quake is predominant.
Yeah. I just, like, someone stabbed the moon. What's going on there?
I mean, it's that wizard.
Yeah.
I hope they don't like, I hope it is a separate thing and it's not like a weird like Destiny offshoot, like somehow they tie it into that.
I don't like, the aesthetic is so different from Destiny. Yeah. It's clearly from the people that made Destiny, in that it is like no game looks like Destiny other than games that have since tried to copy it.
Yeah.
And again, I can't think of anything that looks like this, and this looks so different to Destiny. It's got like, I don't even know how you begin to describe it to someone that's not seen a screenshot of it. Like, it's stark. I tell you what, it's almost got a little bit of Mirror's Edge to it to a certain degree. Like, those kind of stark colours versus white. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice edges, lots of kind of glass and kind of glossy metal surfaces.
Yeah, I'm big into it. Like, I think Destiny does look incredible. It's not traditionally my style of what I'm into. This is much more what I like clean, like, just strong bold colors like that, and I'm excited. I'll obviously play it, like Bungie, like their gunplay, you know, that's the one thing. Whenever I have tried Destiny, I've never properly got into it, but you can't deny how good those guns feel. And if this has that with that aesthetic, I don't know, I just, like you, I just wish it was a campaign. I want a campaign shooter.
My big hope for it is that, like, if if Bungie's now in the deal of like all they make are kind of service games and it's always going to be kind of a PvP focused thing or like whatever, you know, we call Destiny. Mm. My hope is that it doesn't fall too much down the trap that Destiny has of becoming increasingly incomprehensible the further you go, unless you're completely attached to it. Like, I quite like a bit of story in this, and they've said that there's going to be story that pans out over different seasons. Please don't make it so if I miss kind of two seasons, it's completely impenetrable. And please don't make it that, like, it's a game where you've got to play a million matches to kind of grind out guns that are interesting. Like, I'd rather the guns were just the guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look forward to it. Dragon's Dogma 2. I think looks cool. I've never played Dragon's Dogma 1. I know people love it. I know needed Joe Screbbles here to talk about it because he loves meteors flying down from space. I did just, the one thing, as somebody who isn't into Dragon's Dogma, I looked at this trailer and I thought, in a world where we've already had Elden Ring, I was like, this isn't quite doing it for me. And I know we've been spoiled, but like, that's why it's ceiling. But yeah.
So I think it does look a bit jank, but in a way that, like, I looked at it and was like, this is absolutely Dragon's Dogma. This is the most Dragon's Dogma anything has ever looked.
It just needs crawling around on top of a cow to become Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah. And so there was definitely a thing I looked at and was like, I was excited because it looked exactly of what Dragon's Dogma is. Mm. And I don't have the attachment to it that Joe does. I've never actually finished Dragon's Dogma.
Few people in the world do, for what it's worth.
But I do like Dragon's Dogma a lot, and I'm excited to play this. And what it was looking at it and going like, these are all the things that I know of Dragon's Dogma. They just look in much shinier graphics than they used to. I'll be interested to see what it's like in a post-Elden Ring world and a post-Breath of the Wild world, because those are two games that, like, do swim in the same waters. Like, nobody talks about Dragon's Dogma when we talk about those sort of games, but it weirdly is in that. It's got a very kind of wild sense of just go off and do whatever the feck you want in this world. It's just got a little bit more RPG structure to it.
Well, especially when, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in depth later, we've got Final Fantasy 16 coming out in a few weeks, which is, you know, borrowing from Dragon's Dogma combat in as much as it's the same combat director as Dragon's Dogma. So,
And clearly has like a several million more budget to it.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to be too down. It didn't by no means look bad, but I did watch and I was like, yeah, I feel like it was, I didn't see anything there that I was like, I haven't seen before, if you know what I mean.
What I'd also say is kind of like, you know, it being a Capcom game, right? Mm. We've seen like Resident Evil looks a bajillion bucks these days and looks so good. And what I will say is that it did look like the bones underneath Dragon's Dogma 2 still look like they're from the 360 PS3 sort of age. There's something about the way that all of those like camera angles were used and stuff that looks a little bit like jank. I'm just hoping that the final product has the money that I think that series deserves. Like, I think it can be a colossal hitter. Yeah. It just looks like it's one of those things that, like, we know it will be niche, so we'll just give it what we think it deserves. Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed it will. One game that didn't look janky, and I think no one saw this one coming because no one had ever heard of it before. Phantom Blade Zero. That sword combat, that looked... Do you know what? That looked tasty. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Tasty blades. There was one move in particular where basically just, like, runs towards someone, like, and he does like 10 hits
I'm
in a row
of that exact like, move, and it's like I've never seen like so many like dagger slashes at once in a single attack.
I read an interview with the guy making it. It was like, yeah, we're basically inspired by kung fu, like it's kung fu swords. It is kind of what John Wick has kind of popularized recently, and I know many years before that, but you know, has brought it into the mainstream public consciousness. And yeah, that combat alone, like the world, I was like, cool, this is dark, this is like, you know, there's some Souls inspired stuff in there, but like it was the combat, I was like, I'm intrigued to see if it is a Souls like or not.
I think it's
the main
be...
character is called Soul.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
See, I definitely got like a hint of Sekiro about it more than Souls, but actually it kind of looked more like a Ninja Gaiden game to me. Like, it looked fast,
almost, like,
it looked
the way the
action.
Characters looked and the way they were talking, it almost was a bit like a gothic Metal Gear in a way I was getting as well.
It's got a bit of that kind of camp to it, right?
Yeah. I don't know. It looked very cool. It's one of those where we'll definitely have to play it and see. Mm-hmm. But like, it was a very, very good trailer. I'll give it that.
Was the first thing that came out of this showcase that was like, okay, here's some hype. This is something I absolutely want to play.
Yeah, I'm into it. Any do you like the look of the blades, Matt? You look like a man who likes swinging blades around.
That I hope that doesn't go on any kind of record. Thank you, Cardi. Yeah, cheers. Yeah, no, it does look sick. And like, I used to really love like Ninja Gaiden back in the day, so anything that's remotely similar to that will do for me. I wasn't a big like Wolong guy when it came out earlier this year. I just didn't quite click with me. So really, it just depends on what direction this goes. Like, I'm just excited to learn more.
That was meant to be Nails as well. I hope this game isn't like doesn't go like, right, this is the hardest game ever, because I like a challenge, but not every game has to be the hardest game ever. You know what I mean? But there we go. I like the look of it. I think that's all the games. I mean, there's other games. We'll actually loop round, because we got a couple of nice bits of feedback about some things from the showcase, which we'll loop around to at the end. But any other little small bits you guys wanted to shout out?
There Plucky was... Squire.
That does look nice. Yeah.
Ridiculous. Ugh, the, I want this, that.
This is Devolver's game that I am the most interested in at the moment. Like, I love that almost kind of link between worlds element of going from 2D to 3D and into different like areas of the environment. Mm. The first trailer that they did, was that last year or maybe even the year before? I can't remember when that was out.
It's been a long time, yeah.
But yeah, this just absolutely, like, I'm in love with that look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks very cool. Yeah, I want to play that one as well. Big into it. I thought, like we said, there's at least, what, almost 10 things there we're excited about. By no means a bad showcase. So there we go.
I feel like I will play more of that. It's not quite Splatoon than it might deserve.
Oh, we'll get around to Foam Stars in the feedback. Don't worry. Okay. We're going to loop round to Foam Stars, which, yeah, is something. We'll loop round to that. Mm. That was early on as well, and I was like, oh, no. What are we doing? But, yeah, we'll loop round to Foam Stars and a couple of things, maybe even a handheld device. But for now...
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
One trailer that was at the showcase was a new Final Fantasy 16 one. Me and Matt Perslow here, lucky enough to have played, what, the first 4 hours of Final Fantasy 16?
I mean, loads of it now. I've played like 2 hours of it the other time.
Usually when it's an event like that and, you know, very privileged and they're like, do you want to come play the first 4 hours? I'm like, that means I'm going to have to play it again when it comes out. The best thing I can say about that is I can't wait to play that 4 hours again because the combat itself is amazing. And I can skip the cutscenes this time because there's a lot of cutscenes.
That's gonna turn the first 4 hours into about a 45-minute exercise.
But I don't want to start on the negatives because by all accounts, in my head, this game is looking very, very, very good and very fun. I know you had a big old combat demo about, I don't know, three or four months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you were glowing about that.
Yeah.
And
the interesting thing about this, though, is like when I played the combat demo, they gave me like shitloads of abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So playing it from the start, I then got to see what it's like to play it without any of those abilities and actually have like a gradual introduction. And it does mean that like I wouldn't necessarily say I felt overwhelmed before, but I got such a wealth that trying to learn how to spin between all of these different abilities, it was nice to see what the gradual power curve is this time.
Yeah. And I would say even when you do start out with very limited abilities, what sword, parries, dodges, and one little like fire flame move, basically, it still feels very good. Yeah. Like this combat is top tier.
And it proves that the fundamentals are really, really solid.
Yeah. And that's the great part. I think you talked about combat before and like, yeah, I have nothing new to say on combat really that you didn't say originally, apart from feels very good. Very good goblins, actually, that we fought. The first things you find
are goblins.
What are the goblins up to? They're mischievous, aren't they? But they're very goblin-looking goblins. I saw people calling me out in the comments, being like, who signed off that line, the most goblin-looking goblins? I was like, why don't you just go away? That's what I thought.
They are grotesque. They are worse than any goblin I've ever
seen
before.
If you picture a goblin, think of one slightly
times
worse.
That. It's like when you think of a crow, you're actually thinking of a raven.
Yeah, exactly. Just think, oh, there's like a miniature ogre or something. I don't know. Very goblin-y. But yeah, and the other side of the game is obviously story. Final Fantasy is always rich in story and world. And I will say the world and the story has got me intrigued in this one. At no point was I checking out, but I will preface it. I can't speak today. By saying that... of that first 4 hours, like you said, Matt, about half of it did feel like cutscenes. And it's not so much that they're long cutscenes at times, it's more that they interrupt the flow so often. Like you'll have a fight scene and then you'll have a 3-minute cutscene, then another fight scene, 3-minute cutscene. It's not like here's a 10-minute thing and then go play for half an hour. It's the way it broke up for me that it just kind of upset the rhythm slightly, never to ruin it completely. I was like, oh, just let me, because that combat is so good, just let me do it, please.
Yeah. It's not that the kind of like the experience of Final Fantasy is bad, it's just that the structure, and I don't know if this changes as time goes on, but as you say, like you'll get like the big introductory cutscene and then that cutscene will seamlessly blend into a fight. But it does feel like that when you're not fighting the game, at least in those first hours, you don't get to explore. You're either fighting or you're watching a cutscene. And for an RPG, that feels very odd. And I hope that as kind of like it gets all of its chess pieces in place in the first few hours, it then becomes more of a, please go off and actually explore this world rather than have the world told to me.
This is the same criticism that 13 got, if I remember.
I think it is very reminiscent of Final Fantasy 13, certainly in these first 4 hours. And in that way, kind of like, my hope is that it veers actually more towards Final Fantasy X, which is still this sort of game, but Final Fantasy X has more of the ability to kind of work away your own pace through the environments. But there was nowhere to go between the cutscenes, basically. It was just fights in between cutscenes.
It was corridors, fights, cutscenes for the first few hours. We'll say we did get a glimpse into I'm not sure how much later that area was. Mm-hmm. That was a much more like wide open field with side quests, with like things to hunt, which was a bit more promising. Didn't get much time to spend there, but I don't know how many of those areas are, how much there are to do in them, really. But like, I don't want to seem like too down on it, because very little of my excitement is actually dampened. Like, I am still very excited.
Time. Yeah.
I can't wait to play this game. And just like you mentioned it before, but actually playing it, like these massive icon battles, they're like summons, if you're not familiar with what they're calling summons in this one. They're calling them icons, which are just massive monsters. You've got all your classics like Ifrit, Shiva, etc. Some of the fights, whether you're watching or playing them, they're just like a spectacle like very little of matched in a game.
I've never seen anything that looks like this game. That I think that's the thing that, like, even though I wish and hope that later on in the game I get to quote unquote play more, I get to do more of the exploration and I can, you know, choose my own path a little bit more. I ultimately am still not put off by any of those kind of criticisms that I have, because I've never seen anything that is like this before. Like, the opening section that we got, as you describe it, Cardi, in your preview, is like playing the bit where Gandalf falls through the bottom of the Misty Mountains and fights the Balrog. Yeah. It feels like so that, good. And I've just never seen anything like that in a game before.
That's a hell of a pitch.
Yeah, it's so it is quite the opening. And well, we should probably say, like, this was, I don't know, they keep doing this square of this game, saying it was a experience created for media and might not represent the final game. I don't know what that means. It felt like that I was playing the first 4 hours of that game. So, you know, I don't want to mislead anyone, but I don't think there's anything different
in it. Something I learned yesterday that has me pretty excited about this. They've gone to weird steps with the localization, apparently, that, like, cutscenes have been essentially, like, they'll express the same ideas, but they're kind of rewritten for English.
Oh, well, like, it was written in English, I think.
So,
well,
the way that I heard it is that, like, it was Japanese originally, and they'd been, like, the cutscenes and everything had kind of come together like that. And then when it came for the English translation, it was also being produced so that, like, certain characters will talk when they didn't in the Japanese version.
So, like, I know that, so they have the Michael Koji Fox, who's their kind of like localization guy. He's not like localization in the idea of you create your game and then it goes to localization and then it's made into English. He's part of the lore team on there. And I know that, like, the cuts, like, all of the voice cast, I'm fairly sure it's a case of they were cast in English first. So there's a lot of kind of like promotion for the Western side of it, which is understandable in a series that is increasingly becoming Westernized. But yeah, I think you're right in the fact that kind of like it's a true like localization in the idea that it's not just directly what it is. And you can tell because it feels more like you're watching a Western thing like Game of Thrones, whereas Japanese writing has, the only way that I can really describe it is it tends to come across a little bit more melodramatic, particularly in JRPGs, than Western writing tends to be. There's a lot of kind of like big concept words, and the way that people talk about things feels kind of like almost like heavier and more like burdensome on the soul than the Westerners tend to express. And that isn't the, like, everything feels like it just comes from Game of Thrones with a Final Fantasy bent, basically. This
I
time
learned
around,
that too, that apparently that was part of the direction for this too, is that, like, everybody that worked on it had to have watched the entire Game of Thrones box set.
You can tell just from the opening 15 minutes, like, cutscenes of this game, they're setting it up, like, the setup of this world is different factions, different nations fighting over these mother crystals. So, like, it's the whole, like, different people fighting for power. That's the setup for a lot of fantasy. I'm well aware of that. But it definitely, you know, you can tell they've watched Game of Thrones. But, yeah,
exciting.
Very excited. Only, what, 4 weeks away? 22nd of June, I think, Final Fantasy. Find time to play that in as amongst every different showcase happening every day of the next 2 months.
And still try and get some Zelda in as well.
Exactly. I just did the third Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, did you?
Temple last night. The fire one is where I went to third.
Is that the gorge?
Very good. Yeah.
The
fire. I've just got there as well. That is
a very clever temple.
Nice. I've not got anywhere near the temple yet, but I'm in the village, and I need to. Do I have to spend out on the fire outfit, or can
you
I?
You need to buy. I bought one of them, and that'll
buy the chest piece. You'll be fine.
Okay. Cool.
I recommend, if you haven't done it yet, you should go to the Gerudo section next. It's great.
That's what I'm going to. Well, that's the last one I've done. That's my fourth one. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking my time with this one. And actually, everyone will be very pleased to know I have the Master Sword.
Yay.
I got it this time. I did it. And you know what? It was worth it just for the story that getting it, if you do it the way it suggests, tells, because that was a very good story.
Oh, have you done like the quest format for
it? I did the tiers method. Mm. The glyphs. Very good.
I didn't know that was how. Okay, cool. I'm more excited to do that now.
There we go.
I am. I know that this isn't the Zelda podcast, but
there's always time to talk about Tears of the Kingdom.
I am now almost 50 hours into. I couldn't believe it when my Switch told me how, because you have to wait for it to tick over. I was like, I knew I was excited for this, but I'm not a traditionally Zelda person. I liked Breath of the Wild enough to put 80 hours into it, but like I know very little about Zelda outside of this, and absolutely captivated by Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, I think we're in the same boat. Both liked Breath of the Wild a lot, but it wasn't like, an all-timer like a lot of people. But this game, I don't know what it is that's grabbed me more this time around.
So
I think it might just be the abilities. I love Ultra Hand so much.
My other theory is after I put my 210 hours into Elden Ring, I was like, this obviously has a lot of Breath of the Wild into it. So at the start of this year, I went back to Breath of the Wild and couldn't believe how much my perspective on it changed after having played Elden Ring. Because it was like, all of the things I liked about Elden Ring, well, not all of them, but quite a few of them, were drawn from the ideas in Breath of the Wild, very clearly. And so I have really, really liked the kind of like extra 10 hours I put into Breath of the Wild this year. And it properly prepped me for all of those things that I like are in Tears of the Kingdom. But on top of that, I've got this incredible engineering kit that just allows me to come up with all this bonkers shit. It's like, if the first game is a chemistry set, this is an engineering set. And like being able to use all of the physical properties of the world in these absolutely batshit bonkers ways.
I just feel creative in ways that games just don't let you. Mm-hmm. Like, it just feels like you're messing around and you're often just rewarded for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hitting right. And I just want to play more now. But and I'm in that, because I've got in a week or so, I've got a big old 11-hour flight coming up. I'm like, finish it before then, I'm like, I kind of want to wait to finish it the flight.
My idea is that I'm going to do kind of like the temples to get, because I assume if it's anything like Breath of the Wild, like once I've done the temples, I'll be kind of prepped for the finale. No way am I going, like I'm just going to get to that point so I know that I can go off and do it when I've decided I've had enough. And then I'll just play it until the moment comes, like, it's time to finish it.
I want to walk into that, I'm not spoiling here, presumably Ganon fight at the end.
With, like, 40 hearts or whatever.
Yeah, completely overpowered. Just absolutely. That's what
you
I did
just
with the...
You flick him on the nose and have him die.
With the Fire Temple boss, I was definitely a bit overpowered. I just demolished them, absolutely crushed them in about a minute. It felt good.
Yeah, because for several days, all I've been doing is shrines, because they're probably out, like, one of my favorite things. I love puzzle games.
Really, really good in this. I was thinking about how, I think as well, Breath of the Wild couldn't have existed without Portal, but the portal-ness of this game absolutely shines through. Like, I don't think I've played anything that just, needs you to express lateral thinking in a 3D environment like this.
Yeah. Oh, like I did a puzzle. There's a shrine that I did yesterday where it's around that kind of Goron area, and obviously there's lava in it. And it was obviously wanted to me to make bridges over lava, and it got these like collapsed bridges.
I think I did that one yesterday. Yeah.
I just couldn't figure out how to do the first one. So what I did was, there are these little carts with wheels on it, and my impression was you were supposed to attach the like dangling bit of the bridge onto the cart and send it over the river of lava. But I just couldn't get it to go all the way. So what I did is I just tipped the cart lengthways, climbed up onto the top of the cart, and then just parachuted both way across.
Man.
It's like, I did it.
It worked, yeah.
Yeah.
I had one where it was a Jenga tower with a ball on top of it.
I've done that one, yeah.
And it was like the puzzle, you think like, oh my God, I'm playing Jenga. And then you realize what the puzzle actually is, and it's not that. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a joke.
I love them so much. The only time this game makes me groan is when I go into a shrine, and it's like, it's one of those where it's just a battle
just
one.
Combat,
I don't want to do the combat ones. I want to do the puzzles.
There's occasionally, like when they're like the stealth combat ones where that's a puzzle in itself. Like I like that. But yes, just fighting a boss. They're not even bosses.
The ones
really,
where they like strip you of your stuff. I'm like,
Have you done the one where it's essentially Robot Wars?
I did that last night. It's really, really good.
Yeah, I want to do that. Brilliant. You just get to build your own little robots and fuck stuff up.
I can't wait for that one. What a game. Anyway, we weren't even going to talk about Tears of the Kingdom, but we have done.
How do you not?
Exactly. I saw a film this week. It's called Bo is Afraid.
I'm only going to spend.
Ooh. Right, I'm not going to spoil it in any way. Don't worry. How do you talk about this film in, I want to say, less than 5 minutes we're going to spend on
it? And it is a three-hour movie, right?
It's a three-hour film from Ari Aster. If you've seen Hereditary or Midsommar, this is nothing like those. So don't go in expecting.
I love that too, because like Midsommar's kind of nothing like Hereditary either, which is just such
There's definitely themes you can pick out of all of them. But, you know, it's not... Don't go in to this film expecting a horror, because this film is essentially a three-hour anxiety comedy. The way I pitch this film is... Like, and I've had these dreams a lot, and I imagine a lot of people have these dreams. You know those dreams where you're trying to get somewhere and you can just never get there? Like, the train breaks down, or, like, you've lost your lights. Like, you can just never get to where you're going. Imagine that for 3 hours, but it's Joaquin Phoenix. And it's occasionally... Like, I did laugh a few times. It's occasionally very funny. It's often very dark. And for a three-hour film, I really love the opening. Really do like the ending, which a lot of people will... I can't wait to actually talk about what happens in this film with people who've seen it at some point. Middle of this film, I think, takes a little bit of a dip. Like, I think I did ultimately really like it. But not as much as, like, Hereditary is, like, one of the best films in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I really
like,
do
love that film. And I think Midsommar's also very good. This was more, like, 7 or 8. I think I did like it quite a bit. But, like, it goes places. And he is kind of, like... I'd love to talk to Ari Aster about this, but I do kind of feel like he's almost laughing at you when he's making it, like, especially where it goes.
The like, amount of people that I'd heard that just, like, walked out at Cannes that year that it was being shown as well, that were like, what is this? Mate.
It's different. I don't know how to explain. Like, I suppose for films it's similar to, it's kind of got a bit of synecdoche New York to it. A little bit of that
sort
of theme.
Which one of my favourites, so I'm well up for it.
Yeah, I love that film. Like, it's definitely going to be a Marmite film. There'll be people that just don't get this film, don't like it. And I can fully understand that. Same with... It also reminds me of Mother, which is definitely one of those sorts. So I love Mother. Mm-hmm. So I think if you loved Mother, there's a good chance you might like this. But I also can fully understand why people think Mother is atrocious, but I think it's brilliant.
So tell us how you felt about Beau is Afraid and the feedback.
Yeah, if anyone's seen Beau is Afraid, and try not to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, like, it's a hard film to put into words. Like, Joaquin Phoenix is superb in it, and, like, it's shot beautifully. There's some great, like mixed reality things going on as well. Like, there's some cool animation. If you've seen the trailer, you'll kind of have an idea of what it's doing. And it's just... I don't know. I went in expecting one thing, and it turned out to be four other things. Like, it's... I don't know how to explain it. I would just encourage people to watch it. It is 3 hours, and at times it feels like it. I will say, like, sometimes films zip along. This one, at the start, zips along, but then, like, for me, dips a little bit when he spends some time in a forest. But, yeah, I do think I really liked it. Not a film I'm going to watch over and over again. Like, I'm a weird one. Like, well, it was Midsommar is the one that kicked off, wasn't it? That someone watched 5 nights in a row. Hereditary is one I can actually watch, like, quite often. But, like, this is a film. Beau is Afraid I won't be putting on every now and then, I don't think.
Come on, guys. Yeah. Let's all go back to my place. Let's watch Beau is Afraid.
Exactly. Yeah, there's, like, half an hour. I'm not going to spoil it. Don't worry, I know I keep saying that, but I want people to know. That's like, it's like that just, like, spine-tingling, like, just awkward, like, anxiety-inducing stuff of just, like, everything that goes wrong could go wrong sort of stuff. Like, this is, like, in the first 15 minutes, like, he needs to take some pills, and he needs to take those pills with water, and there's no water in his house. The tap stops working. The shower stops working, like everything, everywhere he goes, there's just no water. And he can see some water in a shop across the road, but he can't quite get there because he's kind of agoraphobic. And it's just like these just things just build up. It's like you just can't get a drop of water. And it goes on for a good 5 minutes. You're just like, oh, this is just like, yeah, it's like spine chilling. Like, it's not horror, but at the same time, it's a lot of people's worst nightmare, this film. But yeah, go see Beau is Afraid. I quite liked it. But I imagine a lot of people, if I recommend this film to them, will be angry. So I'm sorry. But yeah,
let's give the pitch to Dale, see how Dale feels.
I'm all for a film that makes people either love or hate it. That means you've felt something. I'd rather see a film that ultimately I hated than one I just went eh to. So there we go. Beau Is Afraid. I'd go see it. It's been out in America for a while, I think, but it's finally in cinemas this week or last in the UK. There we go. Let's get to some feedback, because we have got some stuff relating to the Sony showcase. I believe, Matthew Perslow.
We're going to start with Luke Hudson, who has something about the new hardware. He says, hi, IGN UK team. First of all, legitimately, one of the best podcasts there is.
Oh, we
always
know.
Makes you smile. We know. Love the roster in the team.
Yeah, we always say, before everyone, we always say, we're going to make a good one this time. And we always do it.
Yeah, well, we try.
I wanted to write in to give some of my thoughts on Sony's showcase. Overall, I'd give it a C. Lots of interesting titles, including Metal Gear Solid 3 and its collection. In brackets, bring back 4.
That one can wait. Yeah. But there we go.
I think, depending on how they remake this, you know, if they do a really interesting...
If they make it fun.
Yeah, they make it less of a cutscene. Yeah.
I'd play a remake of 4. I'm less interested in playing just a port of 4, because I reckon they will port it to... If they even can, because obviously it was built for the cell broadband architecture. Commonly known.
Like PlayStation 3 specific jokes in it as well. That might not even work now.
However, one of the missteps, I feel, is Sony's new streaming handheld. I'm not sure who this is targeting. To quote the Diablo devs, you guys have phones, right? Remote play has been available on mobile phones, tablets, PS4s, and PC for a long time now, and Sony even has an Android controller announced. You can also sync a PS4 or PS5 controller to your device and use a little mount to clip it to your phone. With the competition in the market from the Steam Deck, cloud gaming, and now the Asus ROG Hero and Aneo handheld gaming PCs, which, whilst likely more expensive, have much more versatility, and will likely have better screens, I feel this Sony-specific streaming device is dead on arrival. Gone the way of the PSTV, which I foolishly purchased. That's Luke saying he foolishly purchased. I would never buy a PSTV.
You're not Jesse Gomez.
I'm not, no. Do any of you regularly use remote play or portable gaming devices other than the Switch? If so, does this Sony device entice you, or would you prefer to use your phone or laptop? Thanks, respect all the C's, from Luke.
We needed Dale on this one, because he's actually someone who wanted this. So
he's mad.
Yeah, maybe next week. Well, he's not in next week. We'll have to get Dale's opinion on why he wants this. But I think, like Luke just said, that it's bizarre, isn't it? Because it's streaming only, so you need your PS5 on.
Yeah.
If I'm I do use my Switch handheld in my house. Like, if I'm laying in bed, I might use it. But if I'm laying in bed, I've also got a TV in my room, so I'll just play my PS5 on my TV. I don't quite see this. The only time I'd want to use this is on a plane, and the Wi-Fi there is not going to help.
So this feels to me as if there's only one obvious use for it, which is you live you're in a situation where someone wants to use the TV and it becomes the Wii U pad, right? You can have your PlayStation on and you can be playing a game in the same space as, you know, if you're married or, you know, cohabitating, you can be with your partner, or, you know, if you're younger, your parents can be watching whatever parents watch and you can be playing God of War on there.
Yeah, and look how the Wii U did.
Well, yeah. But my main thing is, I don't know how much this is going to cost, but let's say, realistically speaking, it's probably going to be about £200 at least, right? To get
You're joking. No, it's three minimum.
But that's the thing, is at least to cover the cost of what is essentially, because it says it's got the entire DualSense.
Yeah,
in it.
That controller alone is like 75.
Yeah, yeah. Plus an 8-inch screen. So you're talking at least £200, almost certainly more. That screen is 8 inches. Well, your phone, most phones are almost 7 inches. So you're only losing an inch to just buy a clip mount and also have a more comfortable grip, because it is more comfortable just to grip a controller close to you like that than it is to have it wide. Like, I always find the Switch slightly awkward.
For that price, buy a tablet you can stream your games to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or buy a TV. I know it's not that. I struggle. I struggle to see who it's for.
I have a feeling a lot of business decisions like this get made with the bundle as an idea, right? Mm. If you're walking into a shop and you want to buy a console, and then somebody gets to be able to upsell you to something.
The PS5 and this.
It's what if your partner's blah blah blah, you know, that.
I did see some interest. I normally wouldn't subscribe to this sort of like hearsay, but like a lot of people, like, seemed like a rushed announcement, didn't it? It's like, I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, let's bung this in because of the whole Xbox Activision deal about cloud gaming. They're like, here's our cloud gaming thing. We do need cloud gaming. Like, they can't monopolize that.
Yeah.
Also, like, I hear that a lot of decisions like this get made with, like, what kind of technology do we have sitting around? Like, oh, we've got a bunch of controllers. Oh, and we've got these screens. Like, I guess, maybe.
But, like, for much more... I mean, this is me guessing here. Like... surely, if they developed it properly, maybe they don't see the benefit. But they spent a lot of money developing PSVR 2, which, by all accounts, even though I do think it's quite good, is not going to, you know, it's not going to be a massive hit.
No.
Like, if you're going to charge people, well, let's say it's $250, this handheld, probably more. Let's say it's $250. Mm-hmm. For an extra $100, people will buy a Vita 2 or just, like, something that was this but did also have a micro SD on it that could, like... I know it's not that simple. I know it's by no means that simple, but like,
I mean, you've got all of like these things where people are already in the Sony, what they call ecosystem, right? So there are people out there that will only buy like the Sony headphones to go with their Sony PlayStation. Like, so it feels like you're doing that. But I know that Logitech have got a new streaming thing. It looks like a Steam Deck, but it's a streaming thing. But that obviously, because it's Logitech and technically is, I guess, a PC to a certain degree, you can have Game Pass on it and you can have Steam on it, so it becomes much more versatile. So if you wanted a streaming thing for in your house, that feels, and I mean, Logitech obviously, you know, isn't cheap by any means, but I would guess probably not quite as premium as what Sony will charge.
Yeah, so not, I'm not quite sure. It feels like a compromise that no one wants.
If has anybody actually used in a home, like, my Wi-Fi is pretty good, and even my in-home streaming isn't. Like, I wouldn't want to actually play a game on it.
No, I'm quite confused by it, but we'll see. We'll see.
Maybe there's a market.
Who knows? Now it's time to talk about the game you wanted to talk about, Matt. If you'd like to read the next email,
I would love to. It's almost as if you knew. This one's from Chris Boots. Howdy, IGN UK crew. For watching the showcase last night, well, nothing particularly blew me away. Or surprised me, Phantom Blade does look awesome, and I'm already sold on FF16 and Spider-Man 2. One thing did grab my attention. Never seen, and this is Chris Boots' words, a more blatant ripoff than Foam Stars, which just felt like Splatoon with a slight art direction inspiration from the Persona series, which, Chris, you've made it sound sick.
Yeah. That music was just Persona. I was so confused when that music started. I was like, this is just a Persona song.
My question to you is, when do you think something stops being a like a Souls-like or a, you know, Metroidvania, let's say, or becomes a rip-off or a clone? Keep up the good work as always and respect the scene.
It seems like a big question. So let's hone in on Foam Stars.
My answer here is it's the other way round. Things start as clones and then become likes.
Yeah.
So in the days when other first-person shooters came out in the 90s, they used to be known as Doom clones because people didn't understand that you could create genres. And then once there have been so many Doom clones, then they just became FPS games.
Shooters, yeah.
Yeah.
How can it be a clone when they're using foam instead of paint?
And you can climb the foam. You can climb the foam. It's
you
like
can
almost
surf
like
the foam. Yeah. That looks cool. Don't get me wrong, this game looked toilet.
Yeah.
I'm going to play loads of it, but I do make a habit of playing quite bad games.
Like I said, this came on the showcase. I was like, oh no. Because, like, the original, like, when it first started, it was like cinematic. I was like, okay, this is kind of, you know, looks like, I don't know, it looks like a free to play Ubisoft game that will die within a few weeks. Is it Square?
Square,
yeah, Square. Well, it'd be a Square game that does.
Also, it might have some NFTs involved.
Yeah. And then they cut to the gameplay. I was like, oh no.
It looked rough, didn't it? It looked like it was made about 8 years ago.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is this literally for all the kids who are like, I want to play Splatoon but don't have a Switch? I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't think. Like, Splatoon. Like, I'm not. I barely played any Splatoon, but by all accounts, very good fun. I suppose it's weird that no one's tried to really clone it on anything else before. I don't know, but is anyone dying for it? No, probably not. I can't see Foam Stars. It's not a good name, is it? Either Foam Stars, cool. I don't know. What could you call it? Yeah. There's a lot worse things you could call it, to be fair.
I think that the question's really interesting as well, though. Like, when something stops being a like and starts being a...
Yeah.
And it's, I think popularity is the only determining metric. Like, if it gets, like, accepted well enough to be its own thing. If it doesn't do very well, then it's a ripoff. If it becomes the next big thing, then it was like, it was always the... It was the idea defined.
Yeah, I feel like if you take an essence sign and completely put your own, like, world and look onto it and everything, then I think that's fine. It's when you do just, if you're literally just copying things, you're just like, here's my Souls-like game with bonfires and like I'm collecting souls, like they're literally called all of those things. Mm-hmm. That's when it's like, you can't do that.
There's also, I think, one of the things is budget. Mm. If this had a lot more money and looked cooler, I think people, you'd be much more inclined to kind of like give it some time, whereas it looks cheap. It looks cheap, and it looks like, when we think of clones, like take it into the real world, it's the, you know, kind of like when you see, go into kind of like somewhere like a B&M and you see those fake Hulks and they're just called like the Green Smasher or something like that is a ripoff, right?
Yeah.
But if you have
a Luigi costume for Halloween and it just says Plumber's Brother on it.
Yeah, exactly. That's all ripoffs. But for example, when back in the days when DC would do characters that were already in Marvel or vice versa and use that idea, but you create like something that's got like premium feel to it because it came from a big kind of writer or developer or whatever, I think that can distinguish whether things feel like truly like rip-offs, clones, or like things that build on other people's ideas.
It's like when you go into a pound shop and you see all the Oreo rip-offs, like Borneo.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to Poundland to get a Twin Peaks bar.
Yeah. so good.
Yeah, right. And those like massively run in on, if you're using so much of the kind of like the visual branding and identity of the thing that you're taking from, right? Like a Twin Peaks bar is literally supposed to be sort of riffing on the idea of the mountain element of a Toblerone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're too close to the like narrative identity, I suppose, of the thing that you're taking from, then that's going to fuck you over.
Yeah. I just want to play something that is reminiscent of Splatoon, I'll just play the Water Temple from Tears of the Kingdom again.
Yes. So,
there we go. Or maybe just Splatoon. Maybe I'll play that. There we go. I've got one last email here from Michael Kincaid. I believe that's how that would be pronounced. Says, good evening. I really disagree with anyone on this podcast. Oh, no. Who is it? Who said something? Let's hope it's Dale or someone who's not here to defend themselves. Right. And even when I do, I can genuinely see the merits of your comments. But your podcast on Jedi Survivor had me baffled.
It's me!
It's probably me as well, to be fair. Yeah, it's probably all of us, because I think everyone who played Survivor on our team really loved it. Anyway, Michael says, I was not too fond of Fallen Order. Neither were we. I played that game in story mode because I could not get the hang of the lightsaber mechanics. Also, the traversal was appalling in that first game. Whether it was sliding or the weird camera angles, it just felt horrible. I think we'd agree with that, both of those points. Actually, the lightsaber was okay at times in the first one. But I played because I love Star Wars. Since Fallen Order, I platinumed Ghost of Tsushima and God of War Ragnarok, both on normal difficulty. I know those were small accomplishments regarding steel, but I have played and beaten similar games. When I saw the reviews and heard your podcast, I decided to spend $70. Don't blame us for the money. I'm not having that. And give Survivor a real chance. The stance mechanic in this game is pointless. I'm supposed to be okay that a Jedi has to meditate to say I'm going to pull out a blaster now, guys. And that big fight on Jeddah, which we won't spoil what that is, but if you played it, you'll know, is ruined by poorly timed cutscenes and a narrative that cheapens the 20-plus deaths and eventual story mode difficulty I had to drop it to. Traversal is still frustrating and at times beyond belief. The camera will randomly zip around and you are left double jumping straight into a wall, taking ridiculous fall damage every time. I finally had to turn this off. I didn't know you could turn off fall damage. Well, there we go. I'm clearly in the wrong here because this game is getting universal praise from everyone, and this podcast, which was pretty down on the first, seems to agree that Survivor is a considerable step up. I could learn to get better and stomach my terrible parry timing and button mashing to get better, but for this game, with the limited time I have, this game feels like a 6 out of 10 for me, and 4 of those points are because I love Star Wars. So my question is, has there ever been a game, movie, or TV show where everyone you know universally loved it, and you just could not be bothered? Sounds like you got to get good, Michael.
Yeah, skill issue.
No, I'm joking. I don't think the traversal or combat in this game is anything below very good. To be honest.
I think Michael's whole point is that we like it and he doesn't.
I think every
point that Michael has, I disagree with. But it's absolutely fine to have your own take on a game.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there a game? I suppose it's just a question. Yeah, is there one?
I think this one's a real. Oh, this one's going to change the tone of the podcast. But I thought that Dishonored didn't actually do it for me.
God, Matt, are you okay?
A little look over the camera.
Oh no!
I mean, so, as I say, everyone's welcome to their own opinion.
He's fuming. I've never seen Matt look so angry.
It's a game where a lot of the verbs that you use, like the most interesting ones, are locked away from your stealth abilities. Like, it's a game where narratively the correct thing to do is to do the least lethal thing possible, and that means that the most satisfying systems are locked away from you. Mm-hmm. If you want to engage with it in the most lethal sense, then that's kind of the most like fun that you have, the most like extravagant stuff.
I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this little debate.
So I understand that people have issues with the chaos system in that they want to get the good ending, but they want to be able to murder people on the way. It's just like, is the actual ending, like a final cutscene, is that really worth sacrificing the way that you want to play? I really don't see it as like, I understand that there's a flaw there, but I don't think it's a massive problem. Just play the game that you want to play it, and then just accept that like the final 4 minutes of your game is not going to be what you wanted it to, but you can just look that up on YouTube.
Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe I should just be willing to have a little bit more fun.
Like, and it's way more fun if you like what I really like playing it with kind of like a full stealth run, and that will be every time I play Dishonored. The first time I play it is in full stealth. Dishonored is way more fun when you fuck everyone's day up. Like, sit on a perch, consider how you can make everyone below you have the worst time possible, and then do it in a flash. That's the best way to play Dishonored.
A few months ago, I did a little, for me, a speed run anyway, of Dishonored 2 in like 5 or 6 hours, and I just had fun blasting through there and just, causing absolute high chaos madness. It was very fun.
There's less punishment in Dishonored 2 because high chaos in Dishonored 1 actively causes the plague to spread, which means that you get more zombies, but the zombies aren't all that difficult, so they're not too bad to deal with.
It was a narrative thing as well of me like making a decision in my head as well. Like, if anybody that has succumbed to the plague and is like basically...
I thought you were going to say, can you write in? If anyone here succumbs
to the plague, let us know. If anybody succumbs to the plague, they're like kind of mindless, right, at that point. And so I consider myself like, oh, well, this would be awful if I had to be in this situation.
Yeah.
Like, I'd prefer that somebody just shot me in the head. And so I played the game like that too, and then got a negative hit to my morality.
Yeah, somebody later explained to me that it's
more like how the world is perceiving you based on more like less than your action. But it really sat wrong with me. It was like that my decisions in this are maybe not being considered in a way that I might like them to.
Yeah, I understand that.
So that's the little grenade that I threw into the show there.
My usual one here, because we've had this question in a few times over the years, but it's Ghost of Tsushima. I do not get the hype for it.
I do quite like it, but not to the same extent as others. I like it a lot.
I have got it on my list. I am going to replay it, or at least give it another go, whether I'll actually finish it this time. But
it's a game that gets better as it goes on. I know that's not really what everyone wants.
My other thought was is I think kind of like for me, the way people speak about it makes it sound like it's much more than the Assassin's Creed game that I see it to be.
Yeah. I don't know what mine would be. Am I really going to throw one into the mix? I'm like, I don't know why everyone thinks it's so good. That's not a game I hate. What's one I've never cracked? Like, I've never got more than halfway through Skyrim. Never quite did it for me. I was always more of a Fallout than Elder Scrolls anyway.
They're very similar games.
I never fully cracked Skyrim. By no means think it's bad. Obviously very good. But yeah, don't know. It's never quite grabbed me.
Kind of defined the next 10 years of video games. So I suppose I mentioned it earlier.
Exactly. And the other one is Destiny. I obviously know it's very good. And think when I'm playing it, it's very good. I can just never get into it. But there we go. Good stuff. IGN_UK feedback at IGN gmail.com for anything you want to talk about. We'll accept anything. We haven't had anything silly in a while. Any food related stuff. It's probably good, isn't it?
We've grown up. We're sensible now. We don't even eat anymore.
I don't know what we'll be speaking about next week. What will I have seen or played? I don't know. Oh, the new Spider-Verse film is out next Friday. Maybe we'll talk about that.
Nice.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, there's only one song we're playing at the end of this, isn't it? A little song called Snake Eater.
Yeah, what a thrill.
Oh, what a thrill. I can't believe it's back. Oh, I'm very happy.
Imagine you climb that ladder and it like doesn't play. Like they just do a little trick.
I can't wait to see what they do with that ladder. Mm-hmm. Like something's got to happen. Something funny's got to happen. Mm-hmm. Right. I hope everyone else is happy and has a lovely weekend. A long weekend. Mm-hmm. Both the US and the UK have Monday off. In a rare combo day off. Good stuff. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Someday you go through the rain, and someday you feed on a tree frog. It's so deep, the trial to survive for the day.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.